All right, let's get started. If all counsel would have a seat in the jury box, please. Just don't sit next to somebody you think you might be getting in a fist fight with.
I don't mean to get risky here.
Not at all. Yes.
We have several attorneys on the Zoom link. Get started, does anybody have anything they need to tell me that might make this process a little bit easier?
Your Honor, Sasha Reeser for Ascend Elements. I think that it might be helpful if we take the two
Your Honor,
separately.
Tom Murphy for CA on Michigan.
So we've got the motion to...
Your Honor, I was going to suggest a matter of housekeeping first.
We have somebody taking the floor, counsel. Hang on a sec. Go ahead.
So we have two separate issues in our motion, a motion to compel arbitration, which is really just between Ascend and TK. And we have a completely separate issue, which is the motion to stay, which involves all the subcontractors and other lien holders. I think it could be helpful to address those motions separately so that we can address the, I think, much simpler issue with TK first, get that out of the way, and then perhaps whenever the issue that involves the rest of the courtroom, we can handle that.
Right. Yes, sir, Mr. Murphy.
Your Honor, just as a matter of housekeeping, at the previous hearing, you had indicated your desire for one of the intervening parties to tender an order that basically said that everybody was okay to come in. You had included that in your calendar order, but I noticed in looking through the pleadings, nobody had ever tendered an order. So I took the liberty of tendering one yesterday evening. Basically, it just... formally states that all of the intervening parties are permitted to intervene and permitted to file whatever pleadings they desire in terms of answers, intervening complaint, cross claims, etc. I think it might be helpful if we just went ahead and knocked that out before it gets slips between the cracks again.
You file that electronically?
Yes, sir. I've filed that early this morning. It should be the last thing filed.
I believe it's adequate. I'm going to sign it.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Well, I tell you what I would like to do, or feel obliged to do, is to grant the motion for arbitration between the plaintiff and defendant. I don't think I have a lot of discretion in that regard. The U.S. Supreme Court says if I think I do, then I'm wrong. But that begs the question about what to do about everybody else, as counsel has helpfully pointed out. And having reviewed the cases that everyone has cited, among the cases that have been cited is a U.S. District Court case, Leafguard of Kentuckiana versus Leafguard of Kentucky, and it recites some interesting language about what happens in a situation where arbitration is ordered and there are other interested parties involved who may not be subject to the agreement that has been signed, as one has been signed here by the plaintiff and the defendant. The language of it is that they assert that the consent to the sale of the plaintiff's distributorship was a condition precedent to the purchase agreement, and therefore their claims could be resolved by motions for summary judgment. Leafguard of Kentucky and Chambers are correct that such motions are not dependent on the outcome of the arbitration. Thus, the motion will be denied to the extent that it seeks a stay of all non-arbitrable claims. Leafguard of Kentucky and Chambers may pursue this particular theory for summary judgment while arbitration between Englert and the plaintiff is pending. There's other cases that have been cited that has similar language that indicates in other jurisdictions. I didn't see any Kentucky cases that I thought approached this issue. But is that a plausible resolution to our present situation? Grant the motion to proceed to arbitration, which is recited in the agreement that the plaintiff and defendant executed, but reserve the or allow the subcontractors to proceed, or is that just going to open up a can of worms? And are their claims and the language of Leafguard dependent on the outcome of the arbitration?
Your Honor, Sasha Redisser again for assent. We would say that the Leafguard case is not on, it's not even close to on fours with the case we have here. Case we have here is we had a contractor and who had an agreement to arbitrate claims with assent. And we've already gone through that, so I won't rehash that. But the contractor's claims and the subcontractor's claims are all based on the same issues of law and fact. So even if this court were to grant summary judgment, you're still making a decision on those issues of law and fact that the arbitrator must also make a decision on. That creates a risk that this court and the arbitrator will make inconsistent rulings. And both the, I provided a case, Your Honor, It's North Fork Collier, and it cites, it's a Kentucky Supreme Court case that cites a case out of California called Rodriguez. And those cases say that in these circumstances, if there is a risk that the litigation with the third party and the arbitration are going to create inconsistent rulings on issues of law and fact, then the FAA governs and it requires that the court allow the parties in arbitration to conduct a meaningful arbitration on those issues of law and fact. If the court is deciding on a summary judgment motion or even at trial, if the court is deciding those issues, it is taking away the arbitrator's ability to do the same.
All right. I've read North Fork Collieries, and I think you've described it fairly accurately. Anyone else? Yes, sir.
Yes, Your Honor. I had planned.
Counsel, would you mind, for the record, identifying yourself?
Absolutely, Your Honor. My apologies. Vic McConnell for the plaintiff, Turner-Kakosi Joint Venture. And I had planned, because some of the documents that have been filed with the court since our last hearing, backtracked a little bit on the issue of whether or not there was an arbitration agreement and whether or not arbitrability was in the jurisdiction of this court. And I had prepared to point out several things to you in that respect. Now, it may not make a difference to you at this point, but, you know, would you allow me to be heard on that?
Certainly.
Okay, so the reason I want to backtrack is because, may I pass something to you?
Please.
Okay.
Get to the bailiff.
It is because there's, as we argued before, there is a carve-out in this particular arbitration clause. And I want to make sure that I drove the point home well enough, even though it may not change your decision or where you think you're headed in this case. I want the court to look at this again. The clause itself is highlighted.
Let me ask you something.
Yes, sir.
Is a carve-out, in your estimation, the same thing as a knockout? I saw references to a knockout rule in some of the cases.
I have to say, Your Honor, I'm not quite clear what the knockout is.
Yeah,
and I read the same case that you read.
Me neither.
but I do know it's a carve-out, which means
okay.
The parties agreed to arbitrate, or they agreed to have an arbitration clause, but there are certain matters that they did not agree to arbitrate.
Yes.
What is important for purposes of the plaintiff's argument is there's been no case law from Kentucky cited on this issue. It's all been case law from other jurisdictions. Even the case law that apparently attempted to construe the same AIA clause was not reliant upon Kentucky law. It was relying upon law of another state. And that's why I prepared this handout that I gave, because I think it's important to consider the carve-out clause in the arbitration agreement with the Kentucky law that's applicable here. The agreement itself is a standalone carve-out. It says if a claim relates to, okay, it says relates to, Your Honor. That means if for some reason there's a justification for a mechanics lien, and there's other claims that relate to the justification for that mechanics lien, whether it be breach of contract, unjust enrichment, Fairness in Construction Act, whatever that may be, if a claim relates to or is the subject of a mechanics lien, the party asserting such claim may proceed in accordance with applicable law to comply with the lien notice or filing deadlines. It says applicable law. Okay, there's no other definition in that carve-out except to say if a claim relates to or is the subject of a mechanics lien, the party asserting such claim, and claim is defined broadly, may proceed in accordance with applicable law. If you look at the applicable law here regarding lien enforcement actions, that's 376.110 KRS, an action shall be by equitable proceedings. The only way we can pursue that claim and our lien rights is through court action. Action is defined elsewhere in the statutory scheme of the Commonwealth as including all proceedings in any court of this state. And the term shall is a reference to mandatory. Based on all of this put together, Your Honor, it's our position that the carve-out construed in light of Kentucky law, which is the only law applicable here, allows us to proceed with litigating our claims because they involve and relate to the mechanics lien that's been recorded against the property. So that's what I wanted to cover with you real quickly. With regard to...
I'm going to stop. What about the fact that the sentence that you read actually says claim may proceed in accordance with applicable law to comply with the lien notice or filing deadlines. Could that not be construed to say that to the extent that a stay is imposed, say a court imposed a stay and the lien holders hadn't actually filed their liens yet, that language means in the arbitration agreement that they would not be stopped from asserting those liens in spite of the fact that arbitration had been allowed?
I would say this. It's missing one key word, that clause. It's got to be interpreted broadly. It's got to be interpreted in accordance with the wishes of the party. And that clause did not contain the word only. It did not say may proceed in accordance with the applicable law only to comply with the lien notice or filing deadlines.
Okay.
So
good answer. All right. Thank you.
I do have a case, Your Honor. It's Wilson versus Starbucks. This is a case because arbitrability was also discussed in some of the responsive memos. I wanted to point the court to this case. This case actually stands for the proposition, if you look, I highlighted it on page 3, that in situations like this, it is entirely recognized by courts that you can have carve-outs. And if you have a carve-out, that makes the determination of arbitrability within the purview of the court. It does not have to be submitted to the arbitrator. And so the highlighted portions of this case support that. It also requires that if you do not intend for this arbitrability question to be determined by the court, the clause itself has to be clear that it's intended for the arbitrator to determine arbitrability. And that clause that we just looked at in the agreement relating to proceeding with mechanics lien claims does not indicate that that's solely within the purview of an arbitrator's discretion. So for that additional reason, Your Honor, you can make this decision and find that there was a carve-out and that the claims that the plaintiff have been making in this case are triable by this court. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right.
Your Honor, we've gone over this ad nauseum. I'm happy to go through all the points again. I think that this case, Wilson versus Starbucks, is not relevant. Of course, we agree that the parties can agree to expand or carve out or create the arbitration process of their dreams and whatever they want to. But that's not what happened here. And we've provided multiple cases, and I agree, they're not Kentucky cases. We've provided multiple cases that interpret this exact same language. And what they say is, if you look at the North Carolina case that we provide, or South Carolina case that we provided, what those cases say is that a holding that this...
that would be the Ally case? No, I'm sorry.
I think it's Kate Roman, but no.
Yes, North Carolina.
North Carolina. What it says is that it would completely eviscerate the party's agreement to arbitrate, making that clause in the contract completely meaningless. And under contract law in general, that's not something that we allow. We interpret contracts as though the parties intended every single clause in the agreement to have force and effect. I'm happy to go through all of our other arguments we've been briefing if the court was convinced by any of the opposing counsel's points. I'm also happy to stop while I'm ahead if...
did she say stop on my head?
There were no threats. No threats.
All right. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The only thing I would say in response, Your Honor, very quickly, the few words as I can come up with, if you rule the other way, then it's going to render this clause meaningless in the contract. That's all I want to say.
Anybody else?
Your Honor, Chip Clay, I represent Steel Fab, Inc. I just wanted to comment on the practical nature of what you first proposed. And regardless of where you come down on the order granting or denying or whatnot, the stay of these claimants who have provided material and improvements to the project while everyone else argues over everything defeats the entire purpose of the mechanics lien statute. It defeats the entire purpose of why people, you know, do work and don't sign agreements that aren't subject to arbitration. And what you proposed originally would be sound for granting that relief, in the sense that you don't have this stay kind of imposed through the appellate process that comes with an order denying the motion, the order to arbitrate, because, you know, that's what sounds like is, you know, the next practical step. In Kentucky, however, you cannot immediately appeal an order granting a motion to arbitrate. Just some food for thought. Not that you need it, Your Honor, just throwing some things in there.
If I may, Your Honor, I would say that the motion to stay is also immediately appealable. That's not, like, I think, a substantive reason for the decision to be made, but it is both parts of the agreement are immediately appealable. I also want to point out as well, opposing counsel talked about how interpreting our agreement in the way we are arguing would eviscerate this provision, and that's just not so. As the footnote that we cited earlier lays out, the process is that the court retains jurisdiction to foreclose on that lien, and the parties retain the ability to preserve that right by filing the lien with this court, and the court still has jurisdiction over those issues. What the court does not have jurisdiction to decide because of the arbitration clause is the substantive claims underlying the ability to foreclose.
Your Honor, if I may, my name is Anthony Sala. I represent Minor, one of the subcontractors. I'm only speaking on behalf of the stay portion of what you indicated at the beginning. I agree with you on the LeafGuard case. I cited that in my opposition brief. I don't think it could be any clearer. It says Section 3 of the FAA does not require a stay of proceedings as to claims that are not being arbitrated. It makes perfect sense. I don't think you've gotten a case from Ascend that says a stay is required. And that was really the point of my brief, to show you the discretion that you have and the factors that go into it.
So, counsel, are you saying you think I've got it right?
Do you think you have? I do think I've got it right. Yes. I can imagine it's nice to hear that. So, yes, I do think you have it right. The only real substantive reason I've heard so far from Ascend to say all you subcontractors and suppliers, despite performing this work, you have to sit on the sidelines, is this risk of inconsistent results. But it's also just hypothetical, because we don't know the reasons why Ascend's not paying, and I don't think they've been provided to the court either. So to say that there's this risk of inconsistent results, we don't know what they are. And frankly, if we are going to hypothesize, I don't know what they could be, because every subcontractor and supplier has an unjust enrichment or quantum merit claim against the owner. I don't know how that could be inconsistent with what is being arbitrated between Turner and Ascend, particularly when Turner is not the one saying that they want to arbitrate their claims. They're saying they're here to litigate. So you haven't been given a reason, I don't think, of why there could be inconsistent results. And I also don't think it's a sufficient reason under the case law to not stay the case. I also don't think a stay is immediately appealable. I know that's not relevant here today, but I don't think their stay request comes under the FAA. I think it's discretionary, because you can't just say, I want to seek a stay of claims brought by people who didn't agree to arbitrate with me under the FAA. Doesn't make any sense.
Well, what about the language in some of the cases that said that the exact opposite of what you're arguing, that there are some cases, I believe, that were presented that said that the subcontractors, the non-party non-parties to the actual arbitration agreement, can be obliged to participate or accept the results of the arbitration, even if they're not exactly bound by that agreement. There was case law to that effect that was presented, wasn't there?
Yes,
sir. I don't dispute that. I think the point I'm making is it's discretionary, right? By looking at the factors, it's not mandatory. And I will note in the Norfolk Colliers case, the court in that case did note that the party that was technically a non-signatory, it was a bank and loan agreement, mm-hmm. and they were also trying to seek the benefit of the contract. So they were essentially bound by the arbitration provision under a third-party beneficiary theory. So I really think that the case doesn't help them too much. The court kind of alluded that it could be bound by the arbitration provision. I'm not saying that there's not cases out there that will stay claims of non-signatories. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is it's their burden to establish it, and the factors I identify in my brief, it's a very high bar. And particularly when you're talking about all these subcontractors and suppliers that made millions of dollars on an improvement. And so that's all I have. Thank you, Peter.
Okay. Thank you.
If I may, real quick, Your Honor, I agree with Mr. Sala there. An order denying the stay, like you proposed at the beginning, is not immediately appealable. I don't know where that notion came from, other than out of left field.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a pretty oddball Kentucky rule, I think.
We can definitely fight over that in the appeal if we get there. That's not what the focus of this is. I just want to focus on one of the things that was talked about as far as the cases that we cited, and it's correct. The holding of the case that we cited of the Kentucky Supreme Court, it turned on the fact that they were bound by the arbitration agreement. But it cited the Rodriguez opinion out of California affirmatively, and that case is on point. And it specifically says that there is a risk of inconsistent rulings on issues of law or fact, then it must be stayed under the FAA. To do otherwise would completely eviscerate the ability of the parties to have a meaningful arbitration, which the FAA and the arbitration clause guarantee.
To which you reply?
I do, Your Honor. just for the limited purpose of pointing out something, none of us here in this courtroom are there on Zoom. No. Why? A sin is not paid. We don't know. So to make an argument that there could be an inconsistency, it's putting the cart before the horse a little bit. We don't have any idea. They have not responded to the complaint. They have not responded to any of the cross claims or counterclaims, however you want to characterize them. We do know, Your Honor, that Ascend has settled with two subcontractors. And they did it without involving Turner Creek Hosting Joint Venture. They did it on their own. So apparently,
when did that happen?
I have no idea. I'm not privy. I found out from other counsel in this case, but I'm not directly privy to any of the information surrounding how that was resolved. So there may be more. There may be more that have been settled. We don't know. And, I mean, it may be worthwhile to ask counsel for a sin, the details on that. But I want to point out that there's absolutely portions of this case that appear to be undisputed. And we have a whole bunch of subcontractors, and every subcontractor that settles is a subcontractor that's removed from the proceedings from the standpoint of our total claim, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Your Honor, our position is that none of these settlements, especially settlements, are not relevant. It's really about whether or not there is these common issues of facts or common issues of law. But I also know that Turner, his client, does know. They've been in communications with us. They know what's going on. We've been working very cooperatively and closely with his client, my client and his. So I'm not sure what opposing counsel knows, but his client is not in the dark here.
That may be the case, Your Honor. I don't know And my last correspondence, just probably a week ago with my client, was that there was another settlement discussion going on with another subcontractor. And I know for certain my client was unaware that was ongoing.
All right. Well, I think I don't have any choice but to make TKJV and Ascend arbitrate. But I believe that the description of the carve-out is very compelling to me. And because of that, I think I know that my order should be that the subcontractors and the mechanics lien filers should be allowed to pursue their claims equitably through state court. With that in mind, I have tipped off the master commissioner, depending on how this hearing was going to go, to expect to be hearing from all of you mechanics lien holders. And I have talked to an attorney to help our master commissioner, Mr. Harton, with the ordeal of dealing with these claims. And a lawyer from Katie's, and I will provide you. His name is H.B. Quinn. He's a former county attorney in Trigg County, and he has agreed to help Mr. Harton with the details in the sorting through the mechanics lien priorities. And Council, I'd like for you to draft an order reflecting my rulings and include the fact that Mr. Harton is identified as the master commissioner and that Mr. Quinn will be serving as a special master commissioner, and I will take the step of officially swearing him in for that purpose. All right, does that settle everything? Well, doesn't settle it, I know, but does that get everything off the docket for today?
I think so, Your Honor.
All right.